I want to introduce the speaker right now, and this guy was my first sponsor, and also just a super good dude who helped me with more things, and I don't want to cross out, but you helped me with so many things. I love you so much.
Love Glenn. You too. Glenn Alcoholic. Oh my God. I have no idea what the heck I'm going to talk about today. I don't know. I want to say welcome to the new people, of course, right? Like, if you're here and you've got under 30 days, stay close, go to a lot of meetings. That's what I did. I stayed close, went to a lot of meetings. Even I would do like 2-3 meetings in a day if I wasn't working. I would just stay really close because I needed to, because the liquor store was calling my name all the time. Like people talk about the obsession being lifted from them. It took a while for the obsession to be lifted from me. And by a show of hands, who has over a year of sobriety? You new guys that are less than a year, look around. Keep them up for a moment, please. Look around. Those are the guys that can help you. Who's here? Who can sponsor people? Who'd like to sponsor people that are new? Raise your hand. So the new guys, if you need a sponsor and you're intimidated, there's nothing to be intimidated about. We're good people. We like people. We like the low bottom drunks, and I've learned to like the high bottom drunks and all the ones in between. And when I first got here, I was so opinionated about everything. I walked into this club, embarrassed to say, it was somewhere around 1995. I had about 2 years of sobriety in LA. I was living in Los Angeles at the time. And I was working through a cocaine addiction called crack. That gives you just a little bit, like I could probably stop right there and you get a good picture about what happened to me in my life in my early 20s and 30s. And I was such a knucklehead, man. You know, I found Cocaine Anonymous in the San Fernando Valley and it saved my life. And they had this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous in that room. And they had all the words that said alcoholic and more alcoholism to drug addiction. They would say, just put your drug, because they didn't have a book, right? They had a preamble, and it was quite crazy. It was a crazy preamble, but I won't get into that because this is AA, and out of respect for AA, I won't talk about that. But that just kind of gives you an idea where my little marijuana maintenance program took me in my teens, up until that point in my life. And I got sober for a couple of years. I came in here, it was 1995, early in 90, might have been the mid of 94 possibly. It was just after that big earthquake in Northridge. And I walked in, and this was not a non-smoking room. There wasn't a bunch of good-looking people sitting around with plastic surgery, if you know what I mean. Nothing against that. But I was going to meetings like that, right? They were to-do meetings. They were high-bottom drunk people. They were just high bottoms. They had a lot of money, but they had problems. They had personal problems. And I was going to those meetings thinking I was something, right? And I walked in here, and I saw the smoke in the room. Non-smoking section over here. I go home, and I have to wash my clothes. And I was like, I was so far from coming back. I went home, and I was like, I'm not going back there. Don't you know who I am? You know, I had this arrival ego persona that, you know, in my own head, right? And I walked in here and I walked out as fast as I came in. And I continued to do the marijuana maintenance program. About 6 months later, I picked up some weed and did the marijuana maintenance program, started drinking again. In 99, I returned. And in 1999, when I came in the door, I was pretty beat up. I had just gotten a DUI. It was my second DUI. And I was a car salesman at the time. And yeah, couldn't trust me. Fast Eddie, that would have been my nickname, you know? If, like, we were talking about nicknames last night, that guy Treehouse Dave, right? And then somebody else told me today they were short skirt, I won't say the name, you know, and there was like people like, you know, we had these names, and mine would have been Fast Slick Eddie, you know, and I didn't want to do anything that you guys said, but I came in here and I knew I needed to be here because I had a taste. I had a taste of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. I had a taste of Cocaine Anonymous in my life, and I knew there was a better way to live. I had a couple of years at one time, so I had enough in me to know that this was the place that I needed to be. And when I walked in, it was a no smoking room. And there were some people here that are no longer here that are along that long table right there. And they were saying stuff like, saturate yourself in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'd be like, what do you mean by that? Like, I had no clue. They were speaking all these terms, you know, live and let live. First things first, like we have on the wall right here. But for the grace of God, they were practicing humility in that room. Alcoholics Anonymous at the 1600 Club practiced a high standard of traditions. There were a lot of good people here who practiced the 12 steps. They utilized the program regularly. They practiced what they preach. You were here. I know you were here. You were here, you know? Yeah. There was a few people still here. And they were like offering up like what to do at Alcoholics Anonymous by just sitting here and sharing it here. They didn't need to be here. They would sit in their chair and just share about it. Now we hear about those things today because my ears are open and I want to hear that. But at that time, I didn't want to hear that. I wanted to know how you could fix me and I can continue with my regular life and I didn't have to be this way. I didn't have to suffer from alcoholism. And I didn't listen to any of them. And I stayed here. I don't know how it happened, but I stayed here 8 years. I stayed here for 8 years, and I didn't work a step. I was on step none all the time. And I was chasing meetings after meetings. At that time, we had the Alano and Alcoholics Anonymous and NA all in one room. It was cool. Like, we were breaking traditions like crazy, right? But it was cool because you had a variety of flavor of people talking there about their experiences. And I was both, so I was in heaven. It was cool. And about year four, year five, I was acting out in behavior that, in my opinion today, won't keep you sober if you keep doing the things that I was doing. And I had gambling issues, sex issues. Yeah, my life was a mess and it became unmanageable. And I didn't want to accept it because I had inherited a bunch of money and I thought I had arrived again and I was driving around in a Corvette. And I was out. Little Joe would look at me and he'd go, I want your sponsor. That's what he would say. I want your sponsor. And like they would give me these side judges, you know, like, I know now what they were doing. They were picking on me, right? Like they were like, "Hey, dude, you need to grow up. You need to fess up. I don't know what you're smoking or what you're doing or what you're on, but if you don't stop doing what you're doing, you're gonna get loaded again." And Malcolm, you can't see his beautiful face down here. He was my sponsor at the time, and I worked steps with him. But I held on to the worst items in stock. I wouldn't talk to him about some of my sexual inadequacies. I wouldn't talk to him about, because I was ashamed, man. If you really knew who I was, you would go, "Why? You don't even belong here, dude. You need to belong outside. You need to, you know." Alcoholics Anonymous never said, "Don't come back." They never said that. And I was married. I didn't want to go inside. I just wanted to look good doing whatever I was doing. Come in here and talk the talk and sound this way and that way. And I was in self-delusion sober. The book talks about on page 62, it says, selfishness and self-seeking is the root of our troubles, followed by 100 forms of fear, self-delusions. Fear, self-delusion. That was me. I was fearful, and I was living in a world here. You guys were trying to give me the message on the inside, and I was just so distorted that I just wanted the outside stuff. That's what I wanted. And all that did was push aside everything that I could be learning at that time about who I was as a person that I was running from. That's all it did. It just set aside that. And I buried more, and I buried more, and I buried more. I don't know about you, but I think alcoholics are the most stubbornest people in the world. And we got deep holes. Like, we got holes upon, like, I can bury, cement it in, bury some more, cement that in. Like, it took layers and layers and layers of getting honest and willing to get down to causes and conditions. And I didn't want that then. I was in my young 30s and late 30s, and the gift was here, and I wasn't accepting it. It was right here in these rooms. And I wouldn't listen to my sponsor, and you know, I wouldn't call him but once a week, once every 2 weeks, once every 3 weeks. I just always had to have the hustle. Like, I had to have the hustle. I was afraid of what? What was I afraid of? They talk about suit up, show up. I always added one in there, grow up. That's the one that I never wanted to do. I never wanted to grow up. And I'm still working on that, right? We're not perfect. It's progress, not perfection. But I didn't want to look at who I was, you know? Alcoholics Anonymous has people in here that will tell you the truth about you without coming to you and telling you the truth about you. If I listen and pay attention to the people that are doing the work in Alcoholics Anonymous, and what I mean by the work is actually utilizing the steps in their life, and they're uncovering their experiences here. And if I listen to them closely, instead of the old head judging who they are, they don't measure up, they're too overweight, they're too skinny, they're too short, they're too tall, they're too this, they're too that, because I'm opinionated and judgmental all day long. Right? Instead of setting aside that stuff and really take a good look and hear the message of what's going on here. That's the good dope. That's the best high ever. I don't know about you, but when I walk into a room of Alcoholics Anonymous and then I leave out of a room of Alcoholics Anonymous, I always got a little bounce in my step, man. I'm like, yeah, what's up? How you doing? Yeah, I feel good. And then I get home about 2 hours later, I'm like, oh. That self-pity and self-delusion stays with me. It doesn't go away. That's the part about alcoholism that I never understood. I thought if I worked these steps, utilize this program, read this book, help others, that it would disappear. It would just disappear completely, but that's not the case. Every day, I have to find a way to get out of myself. And the tools that are here, they help me do that. See, I never used the program before. I just ran on self-will. Self-will run riot. And then I would hurt people around me. That's what I would do. Because I wanted you to know how right I was. And how much my opinion mattered. I needed you to know that, because that way you could validate me by telling me I'm right. And then I can measure my ego upon that. And I would feel good about myself. Right? Instead of practicing some sort of humility and allowing God to work in the message of Alcoholics Anonymous wherever I go, I can practice that. It's my choice. Right? When I got here, I didn't know anything about the first step. I didn't know that there was a step before the step one. It conceded to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery. It's in chapter 3. It opens up that way. It says that I have the delusion that I can somehow someday drink like other people. That's the lie. That's the lie. I had to learn that. Because it will tell me that I can. All I got to do is miss a few meetings, stop reading my book, stop helping people. I'm back in self. I'm back in self-delusion. Dreaming about the things that I should be doing, where I should be doing them, with somebody else, somewhere else, somehow else. You know, it's like, I'm back in that. I have to practice this thing all the time. And sometimes I wake up and I go, I'm so grateful that I get to do this. And then sometimes I wake up and I go, man, I got to read the book again. I open the book and I read it. Man, I got to pray again. So I do it. Because my sobriety is not measured on what I think. It matters what I do. It matters how much effort I put into my life in the positive way. I'm full of negativity all the time. All I got to do is wake up and be selfish and self-centered, have some fear creep in, and I am on my way to ruining a whole day, bro. I am on my way to ruin a whole day. And then that magnifies with what you're not doing for me, what I'm not getting from you. And then it consumes me with fear, and I don't know how to get out. Now I start making decisions based on self. I start making decisions based on fear. That's what I do. All I got to do is unwind these steps. And if you've never worked them, there's nothing to fear. We suggest that they work, right? People think this book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we only know a little. They're softening the blow. They're like saying, really, get busy. In fact, let me read a little bit of vision for you. And all the steps are in vision for you. Page 164. Let's see where we are here. So at the end of some meetings, not all meetings, but some of the meetings that I go to, sometimes we close with this reading, or sometimes it's the promises. But I want to read this right now. It says, our book is in page 164, third paragraph. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we only know a little. Then it says, God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. So collectively, they're saying to you and to us as a group. If I'm working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I humble myself that I don't like know everything, and what the man in front of me is trying to teach me, and what the new guy that walks in the door is trying to teach me, instead of me saying, look at that dude, man, are you kidding me? Again? You know what? When I got here, my hand stayed in the air for 2 years. I got back into Alcoholics Anonymous after a 7.5 year relapse. I stayed sober till about 2007, mid-7, around that time. And I went out and drank. I was in Mexico. I was down visiting strip clubs. You know what we do, right? We're going to get it on, man, right? I haven't drank in 8 years. I'm going to do it all in one night. I stayed down there for 3 days. My poor brother-in-law that was with me, he went with me, and we ended up down there. He was begging me to leave and to take me out, and I wouldn't leave. I took hostage, right? Because it was like I never stopped drinking. And by the time I got back here, it was 8 years later. I called this guy, Ted Kay. He used to come in the meetings all the time. He was a fellow car guy. He worked next door to me. I worked at Home Motor Chevrolet Cadillac. He worked at Saturn. We would visit each other every day. But I stopped doing the deal around year 5. I stopped taking cakes. I stopped coming to meetings. What little I was doing that was keeping me sober, I threw away. So what little I was doing to keep me sober, I threw away. And I ran on self. 3 years later, I drank. In between, there was a lot of nude bars, a lot of gambling, a lot of infidelity. I don't know how my second ex-wife stuck with me. I don't. I have no clue. But she did. But by year 23 together, we were done. And as I crawled back in here in Alcoholics Anonymous after a phone call to Ted Kay, he said, look, I'm going to come get you. I'm going to take you to, I'm just going to come get you, what he told me. And I said, great. I thought we were going to go to Denny's, and I was going to tell him about my woes and talk to him about my self-pity and how my wife is getting ready to leave me and all this stuff. And you know what he did? He took me to here, right here, Thursday night. He took me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. There was probably 20 plus people in here at the time. And I remember sitting along that glass wall about where Shelly is right now. And I remember looking around the room going, he's still here? Oh my God, she's still here. Oh my God. Like I'm looking and I'm hammered. I got a buzz going on, right? But I'm always hammered, right? That happens all the time anyway. And I'm sitting along these walls, and for 2 years, my hand stayed in the air. But I kept coming back. At first, I only came back because I knew it was an excuse to go to the liquor store on the way home and I could grab a bottle to drink. Right? I used you as a crutch in my life. I didn't want anything that you had. And as I was working towards hitting like the final days of my bottom, my last days coming into Alcoholics Anonymous was pretty brutal. And for 2 years, man, I lived in hell. I was in a spot where my intentions were to want to stay sober. I didn't really have the willingness to really get sober. I just wanted to placate all this in my life so I can keep the party going and manipulate everything I had in my life to validate me as a person and be okay. I'm that shifty. I can fool myself, man. I think we all can. I think all of us have a little of that sneaky Pete in us, you know? We all can fool ourselves. That's the self-delusion the book talks about, you know? And when I came in here, my hand just stayed like this. It always just went up. And I raised my hand because somebody told me a long time ago, just get honest about who you are and where you are. It doesn't matter if you drink or you use or whatever. Just keep coming back, keep telling us where you are in your life so you can be honest and be held accountable for who you've become, so you can have the willingness and desire to work these steps to change my life. So I did. I'd get 43 sober days, and I used to come over here and I'd light this birthday candle. They gave me the birthday commitment, you know, because they were like, man, you need a commitment to keep you sober. This birthday didn't keep me sober, okay? But what it did was it allowed me to practice some humility in my life every time I came up here. Even when I had 43 days and I went out and drank again. And then I would like go a week without calling. My sponsor at the time was Joe K. And I would call him and go, where you been? I've been drinking. I figured so. I didn't want to bother you. You doing all right? Yeah, what are you going to do right now? I guess I'm going to go to a meeting. Right on, brother. He never said, you didn't call me for 2 weeks. I'm not sponsoring you, right? He never gave me that I'm too good not to help somebody attitude. Because I'm that guy sometimes. Sometimes I get in that spot where I'm practicing this deal and I'm doing the deal and I got the books I'm reading and I got this knowledge that's coming into me and I got my higher power in my life. And then the new guy who can't stay sober, I'm like, dude, find somebody else to help you. Like, what the hell? Where'd that come from? Because I don't know what it is. If it's ego, or maybe I just put myself in a position to where I don't want to bother this anymore, right? He didn't give up on me. He practiced humility in his life. He was a good foothold in my life to show me later on when I started to act that way, that, you know, you need to practice some humility and do God's work. We need to rise people up, not tear them down, because I'm a good teardowner. When we used to stand on a lot in the car business, I could tear you apart. You'd walk in, whether you bought something or not, I was all over you like a cheap suit. And then when you left, oh man, you know what? They're probably doing this, they're probably doing that. And I would just bag on you over and over and over just to make me feel good. Why? I stopped by the liquor store on the way home and drank my way home. That was my world. My world became very small. My world was go to work, drink at work, get off work, go to the liquor store, drink on the way home, get home, take the dog out, drink while I was walking the dog, and pass out in bed. And that was nightly. That was at the end of my drinking. That's where it became. Because I'm an alcoholic. Once the drink takes, I take a drink, the drink takes me. I can't control it. So it took me some time to surrender and concede to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. Like really concede that I don't have this. I can't manipulate this anymore. I don't have a back pocket plan. So when they read my book, the book is meant to be suggestive only, it's because they're just trying to soften the blow. But if I take an honest assessment of who I am and where I'm at in my life, and I couldn't even look at myself in the mirror, man. I was that disgusted with what I had become in my life. The suggestion And I didn't know this, but I was listening to a workshop tape on the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This guy, Cali Robb, was going through the book, and it was the first time that I had ever done anything like this. But I wanted to be—I wanted to go through the book from being to being. And not that my sponsor wasn't doing his job, not that the people in Alcoholics Anonymous weren't carrying the message. I just needed something a little bit more different. And this guy was different. He was on fire, you know? And he got into this book in ways that I didn't understand. It was called Unpacking the Mysteries of the Big Book. My friend Bob F., who is Nate's sponsor, right? Had been coming to Alcoholics Anonymous for over 20 plus years. He came into my life when I first started coming to AA. And when I was really on fire and getting back with it and taking commitments, and I took this podium meeting, and that's where I met Nate, and that's where I met Bob, and Bob introduced me to Jeff, was on the course, led me to, like, it just turned my life around. And I listened to this Big Book workshop, and it changed my life. It opened my eyes, and I became book friendly all of a sudden. Okay, I'm at 5 years. I'm back at where I kind of was many years ago, just kind of like cruising. I was cruising, then I was going through a health scare. I had a cancer for the third time came back in my life. Let me tell you something. If you haven't had a health issue where you've had a brush where you could go either way, that's when I can either blame God or I can accept that He'll help me through it. And I chose to accept that He will help me through it. And that's where my journey started, a little bit different with Alcoholics Anonymous. And so in the book, it says, God will determine that you, here we are. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. Morning meditation. Didn't know anything about that then, but I started practicing it. And it wasn't easy at first, right? A couple minutes here, a couple minutes there, you know. But they're everywhere on YouTube. Like, how easy is the program today? If you're uncomfortable and you're sitting at home, put on YouTube. Listen to an AA speaker. You can plug right in no time, you know. And like, I started listening to these meditation tapes, and they started helping me, like, get calmer, in a calmer space. It started helping me look for the answers in my life as opposed to trying to make my life work all the time. I need this, I need that, give me this, give me that. It started to slow me down a little bit and reflect on what I could be doing here in AA for the common good of the man as opposed to what I need from AA. You know, over time, it didn't happen right away. I didn't do one session and go, God, this is great. I just love this. I'll do it again. It took a while of consistency. I heard one time from a friend of mine, Joseph M. He used to come to this meeting a long time. He lives in Sacramento. And he said to me one time that Alcoholics Anonymous does for me slowly what alcohol did for me quickly. Man, that was powerful, you know? And he was a good friend, man, and he helped me out a lot. And so, when I read this, when I first started hearing this, I never paid much attention to it. And then it started getting into the steps. It says, ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. That's steps 11 and 12, right? The answers will come if your own house is in order. How do I get my house in order? By myself? That didn't work. It never worked, man. It never did. It wasn't until I started working these steps like my life depended upon it, did my house started to get in order. Did I started to practice some humility. So that I started to understand what these prayers meant out of the book and the suggestions and directions that were in this book. How my life became dependent upon it to survive, not from my physical being, but my emotional being. Here. Right? If I'm always going to have self-pity and I'm always going to be in self-delusion by unwinding this program, I have to practice this program. I have a disease that is out to kill me. I have a mental illness, right? The book talks about it. It's a mental illness. It is an illness of the sort. And it talks about ruining the people around us, those lives. The ripple effect that it has on our loved ones. I don't know how many ex-wives, I have two ex-wives, I don't know, I mean, how many Cana's vain attempts of relationships that I tried to get into that I was emotionally unstable for that didn't work out and thought it was their fault, right? Because I'm good at blaming others and justifying my actions, right? And if I don't be careful, I can do that today too, right? And I get that from these steps. And so it says, the answers will come if your own house is in order. Then it says, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. So if I don't work these steps and I just come to this meeting, I'll be sober. If you haven't drank today, you're a miracle. If you continue to stay sober and you haven't worked steps for a long time, you're going to stay close. You'll make a lot of friends. You go to some barbecues. You go to the bonfire meeting. That's what I did, right? Dank was at the bonfire meeting all the time, was service all the time. We came to the same meetings here on Happy Hour over and over and over. We had a little group of us, me, Dank, Joseph, Jessica, Mike. They helped me because I wasn't ready to pursue the happiness that God had in store for me. They softened the blow. They helped me. But I had the willingness to find out what it was. I had the willingness and the determination to find peace and happiness within. I had that in me. But man, let me tell you what, I dove into Alcoholics Anonymous in service, and I also dove into Alcoholics Anonymous with friends because I was afraid to be alone. I still had this fear within me. I still didn't have a relationship with God to hold me at peace. I needed all of you because I was still keeping God at bay. I was still struggling with step two. Even though I had worked steps four, steps five, step six, I got honest in my sex inventory. The man across from me got to hear all the grosser handicaps in my life, and it was scary. It was freaking fearful. But I did that because I wanted to stay sober more than I can breathe. I made those amends that I was supposed to make, right? As long as I didn't injure others, which was them and not me. Right, I can't go back and tell my ex-wife about all the infidelities that, you know, I had in her. That would not make things cool, right? But I can go to God. I'm going to practice forgiveness. I can take on new friendships with females today and treat them with respect. That's my living amends, right? And I don't say that because, you know what, look at him. He's such a nice guy. No, if you have issues with that area in your life, you can turn things around. That's why I talk about that. Recovery is in all aspects of my life, not just one portion of my life. And I didn't get that until I started bringing God in it. And I wouldn't allow God to be in. When I said the word God, my ears went down, my heart went, whoa, stop. That's a powerful word. But yet, I didn't want to look at my life and what it had become. I tell you what, I'd rather believe and have a higher power and release energies of toxic energy in my life to something that I don't understand. Then to hold on to it, what sense does that make? For a guy like me, I'll manipulate that. I don't want to hear the vision for you. Keep your promises to yourself. I got some more room to dig, right? Yeah, I'll dig out the bottom and keep moving forward in that area, you know? And then, so I do this morning meditation. I start realizing who I'm becoming as a person. The answers are coming if my own house is in order, because now I'm not acting like a fool in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm actually taking some ownership of those character defects that I want God to help remove them from me. I'm not trying to remove them from me. The sixth step doesn't say, or the seventh step doesn't say, it humbly asks him to remove our shortcomings. It doesn't say, Glenn, why don't you remove some of these shortcomings? You're good. That doesn't work for a guy like me, because I'm a good manipulator. I'm a street guy. I will take a little and go a mile. And then it talks about, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. So if I'm just chasing and running and looking good and stirring the pot and talking about other meetings and not helping the new guy and I'm doing all that, what am I transmitting? There's no relationship there with God. It's self again. I'm running in self. See to it that your relationship with him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. If I go back and I look at chapter 5. And it says, half measures avail us nothing. On page 59, just before the steps, it says, half measures avail us nothing. We stood at the turning point. What's the turning point? We asked for His protection with care, with complete abandon. Those two tie in together. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. So if I can get to that part where I'm willing to just believe that there's a higher power that can take these defects away, that there's a higher power that can make me whole, that there's a higher power that can help me get to a spot in my life to become the man that my higher power wants me to be, I have to abandon myself in that point. I can't hold on to it. I can't manipulate it. I have to let it go, whether I want to accept it or not. It says here, that's the only way that great events will come to pass. That's what it says. And it's like, I never was in the book for a long time. I didn't care about this book. In fact, I got a third edition at home that's ripped to pieces with a coaster mark on it, dude. Right? You know, like, it's taken how many years? I don't know, 33 plus years of going in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous to get to this spot in my life where I can go, so this is it. Ah! You know, I look at guys that are like Nate Dogg, right? He's 32, 33? He got here when he were 26? You know what I was doing at 26? Smoking cocaine and looking for prostitutes in Hollywood and Vine. Yeah, look at that. Yeah! Give me some more of that, dude! Believe me, I could fill the room with those stories, man. I am nothing short of a knucklehead. What I'm talking about is the fast experience. What I'm talking about is the fast experience that I've received the gift in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's a relationship with my higher power. You can choose whichever one you want. Whichever one you want. No one here is telling you to believe in a certain God, to do things a certain way. We suggest, we share our experiences. Let me find something here. We share our experiences along the way. Third step promises, page 63. So when I abandon myself to God as I understand God, this has been my experience. When I do that, all of a sudden it says we had a new employer. Oh, I'm not in charge, right? That's what it says. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, He provided what we needed if we kept close to Him and performed His work well. If we kept close to Him and performed His work well. Now, I don't have a measuring stick anymore. So what I do that is well doesn't have to be measured by what you do that is well. Maybe the best that I can do that day is to pass by a liquor store, not go in and get to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and help set up some chairs and make some coffee for someone. Maybe that's just where I'm at that time, right? There's no measuring stick here. We try to do our best. Perform His work well. When you establish that on such a footing, became less and less interested in ourselves. So we take the eyeball off of Glenn and we put it on somebody else, doing something else, somewhere else, right? Little plans and designs more and more became interesting in seeing what we can contribute to life. That's how I'm living my life today. I kind of wake up and say, okay, what can I do? I'm retired today. I've been retired now for about 7 years, and it was due to some medical illnesses that I had in my life. It was like when I first got here to Alcoholics Anonymous, it was all about what I was going to get. Give me, give me, give me. I need. Then the transformation happened. Now it's about what can I do for the fellow man. Now, I'm not always going to tell you right now. There is no one in this room every day is going to practice that. But I have these steps to get me aligned. No matter how far down the scale I've gone, if I have the capacity to be honest, I can allow myself and align myself with these steps so I can become more useful for the day. So it says, as felt of a new power flowed in, we enjoyed peace of mind. I have that today for the most part. Discovered we discovered that life successfully and became conscious of His presence, we began to lose the fear of today, tomorrow, and hereafter. That's that anxiety stuff, man. You know, we talk a lot about worry and anxiety and fear. And it all, like when I get into worry and anxiety, mostly it's always about finances. I don't have a significant other, so I've been blessed not to worry about that part of me right now, because, you know, broken as I am, when I get into a relationship like that, I got insecurities going on in me, you know, and I gotta be careful with that stuff, man. God, you know, I've always wanted something to be more palatable in my life. I always wanted a loving relationship. I always wanted to share some intimacy and time with someone, not just the sexual thing, but like really let them see into me and connect with somebody. I find it profound that people can do that today. Like, I look at my brothers and sisters over here, how they have a loving relationship today. It just blows me away. And you know about each other's stuff. Like, I had to always hide my stuff, right? And now I don't have to do that. I can allow God to come in and fulfill that need today. And He'll guide me in the right direction. He's molding me today. And you know what? I know He's molding the girl out there. He's molding her. And the magic will happen when in His time. But I'm ready for that stuff now. It wasn't a couple years ago. All I wanted to do was run, hide, manipulate still. It wasn't until I started studying the book and getting closer with my relationship with my Creator that I wanted some of these defects to be removed. And there's one other thing I wanted to read. Let's see here. Bear with me. I didn't have a plan. I really didn't. We Agnostics, page 46. Yeah, page 46, We Agnostics. It says here, we found that as soon as we were able to lay aside our prejudice and express even willingness to believe in a power than ourselves, greater than ourselves, we could commence to get the results. Even though it was impossible for us to fully define or comprehend that power which is God. Fake it till you make it. I don't know if I like that saying or not. Believe that we believe, maybe. Maybe that one I like a little bit better. And then it says, God, our own conception of God, however inadequate, was sufficient to make that approach and effect and contact with Him as soon as it... In other words, it says that God does not make too hard a terms for those who seek Him. That's what the book says. I ran away from this chapter when I first got here. I think I skimmed through it quite a few times. Because I always thought I believed in God. Why do I got to read that? I was working with another guy recently, and he said, I believe in God. Why do we got to read that? Because there's some answers in here that we're going to hear. I have to be willing to set aside my prejudice. When I got here, I was so naive. I thought it was a color thing, being prejudiced, right? And I don't have prejudice in my bones, right? But I'm not talking about that. Talking about contempt prior to investigation. I got it all figured out already, man. Why do I need to do that? That's me. So, on page 55, 7 minutes left. Okay, here we go. This is where it started to hit home for a guy like me who was so stubborn. Now remember, I'm stubborn, selfish, self-centered. I got fear. I still got this stuff. But when I practice in something that is not of something that helps me release these obsessions, I guess. Because I can be OCD about anything, dog. Look at my house, man. If one thing's out of place, I'm like, oh my God. It's 12 at midnight and I'm over here tapping that out, you know? Like, it's midnight, dude. You're supposed to be in bed. And I'm trying to fix it. Because I have that in me. I'm obsessive. So it says, this is what it says. Actually, we were fooling ourselves. For deep down in every man and woman and child is the fundamental idea of God. It says we are fooling ourselves. So the most skeptics who are sitting here today, they're identifying with you. We're fooling ourselves, but that's okay. If you don't believe in God and you don't want to believe in God, don't listen to that. Just keep coming back. Be willing that we believe maybe someday. If you just have a willingness of a tiny little mustard seed, they say, right? It can grow. You don't have to be doing anything else but staying sober and staying close. Bottom line, if that works for you and you're staying sober, friggin' do that. Because we don't want you to get loaded and ruin your life. Okay, so it may be obscured by calamity. That's the voices in my head. I got some of that going on, right? Who has that with me, right? Calamity, right? Let loudness, that yak, 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 and projecting negative thoughts about this and that. And, you know, I'm in a real peaceful day, but my PTSD from the relationship that I had before is scaring the shit out of me about the girl that I'm thinking about dating today. So I just say, no. Nope. I'll just do this. I'm just being real, man. Get to know Glenn. This is my hour, dog, you know? All right, so the calamity in my head. So this is what blocks me from the spirit in me. That's already in me that I don't know that's in me. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp. That's ego, my ego. How am I going to look if I believe in God? How am I going to look if I pray to God? How am I going to look if I don't run the show? How am I? What about me? What about me? What about me? Right? And then it says, by worship of other things. Now, I have worshiped a lot of stuff in my life. Money, property, prestige. That was my higher power forever. And I chased that forever. Especially to women. Please fix me. Fix Glenn. Please fix me. I want to be fixed. God, you look perfect. You'll fix me just for about an hour. And then I'll go right back to being me. That's who I am, right? But it says this. I'll read the whole thing. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things. But in some form or another, it is there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and a miraculous demonstration. Now, I see that through you. I don't always see that in me. I see it when the new guy or the new gal comes in and they got 60 plus days of sobriety and they're no longer raising their hand and they got a newfound spirit, right? I see that in that. I see it in the guy that was sitting in the rooms at 10 years of sobriety who shares about maybe going through a divorce or maybe he's lost everything in his life financially. And he stays connected and performs his work well. And he gets out of the way to see what happens. And he has practicing trust and faith in his Creator. That's the miraculous demonstration that I see. I don't put down the measuring stick. I don't get to see that today, see? And that power in human lives, that's all of you, are fact as old as man himself. We finally saw that a faith in some kind of God was part of our makeup. No matter how small it is. That didn't say that. It's just telling you that's in me. But it says here, part of our makeup. Just as much as feeling as we had for an old friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly. We had to search fearlessly. I know I had to, but he was there. You ever pray so hard and you don't get any answers? You pray so hard and you don't get any, and then you start blaming God? I've done that. I lean to pray. Have faith, have trust, practice patience. I'm horrible at that stuff. But that's what this is telling me to do, right? But he was there. He was as much as a fact as we were. We found that the great reality deep down within us in the last analysis is the only there that he may be found. So I love that part when it says the last analysis, because a guy like Glenn I have to exhaust everything. I gotta exhaust marriages. I gotta exhaust people who love me. I gotta take everything out of life that I've tried to practice that made me a whole. And set that aside. So steps 1, 2, and 3 help me find this Creator. Steps 4 through 10 help me establish a relationship with that Creator. Because I still got all these funky craziness ideas going on in my head. And when I get right with another human being, I practice humility. And when I trust God, I get out of Glenn. I can calm that anxiety down and that worry, right? When I make those amends and I practice forgiveness, I'm not letting them off the hook. I'm letting myself off the hook. I don't hold on to that anymore. I let it go. No matter how far down the scale we've gone, right? Hey, man, I've been molested. I've been beaten. I've had a hard upbringing. And if God can mold me into the person that I'm becoming today, He can do it for anyone because I was freaking lost. That's my message tonight. Set aside your prejudice. Allow the willingness in your life to see what God has in store. Practice some honesty, some truth. Don't validate yourself through your money, property, and prestige. Others need help. Others need love. Practice some love. Right? Stop with the judgment. Help thy neighbor. Be kind to yourself. Give yourself a break today. 2 days, 1 day, that's a big freaking deal. If you didn't go to the liquor store and you hear sober, congratulations to the both of you and to you. Seriously, that's a big deal. 30 days for any of us is huge, right? I love Alcoholics Anonymous because it's given me a life today that I don't get that I get to have. But I don't get caught up in that. All I do is do what I can here for the fellow man. I got a couple of guys that I sponsor. I'm grateful to those guys in my life because they hold me accountable. I get to see them in me. So I practice the 12 step as best as I can. I want to thank you all for allowing me to talk to you tonight. Thanks for allowing me to share. Have a wonderful night. Woo-hoo!